Dear Hank and John.
Or as I prefer to think of it, Dear John and Hank.
It's a podcast where two brothers answer your questions, give you dubious advice, and bring you all the week's news from both Mars and AFC Wimbledon. Back together again, the normal way, John.
At last.
I went to turn over the calendar, and I found out that it jumped straight from April to June. I was dismayed.
That got me a little bit, but only because it's been so long since I heard one of your jokes. I'm really glad that our fake feud is over. It was getting harder and harder to fake it. But man, what an intense period in both of our lives. And I'm just glad that we're back together again. I really genuinely missed you. And I am so happy that you're here. Can I paint an audio picture for you, Hank? Can we take it?
Yes, I'm so curious because I can, even through my little earbud, I can hear things going on.
You can hear that it's a little bit of a different situation. So I'd like to take you. This is going to be an episode of, we're going to go full radio app now, Hank. Uh-huh. All right. So I'm painting an audio picture with only the tools at my disposal. I come to you live outside. Right now, I'm looking at the back of a Jiffy Lube and at a dumpster. And if you had smell-o-vision, it would be working overtime right now. I'll actually have a picture on the Patreon because I'm not Radiolab quality at describing my surroundings. I'm sitting on a 5-gallon bucket while my microphone is on another 5-gallon bucket opposite me, and my computer, where the questions are, is on an empty fuel can of some kind.
Oh, wow.
It's a really... You think making movies... By the way, I'm on the set of the Turtles All the Way Down movie. I'm actually far enough away from the set that hopefully I can speak to you in my outside voice. But you think making movies is super romantic and fancy pants, but I'm just like... I'm staring at, like, half-burnt tires in a suburb of Cincinnati.
Well, I bet a lot of times it is pretty fancy pants, but, this is not a slight at all, but your movies aren't, like, big-budget blockbuster thrillers.
They're certainly not. No.
They don't cost as much.
No.
Everybody wants to keep the budget, where it needs to be so that it will, like, work.
Yeah, so if you feel like, wow, it sounds really, really weird... That's why. I agree. The direction of the wind is such that I am directly downwind from the dumpster itself.
Yeah.
Right now in my view, I have, there's like a, I think it's part of a car, like a bumper, like half of a bumper. And then I also have a number of discarded beer cans. So that's the vibe. That's how we're coming to you today. Live. It's happening.
Well, so you showed me a little bit because we had our Patreon live stream before this, and I saw it a little bit. And I think that what you haven't expressed is that you are in the woods.
Oh, yeah.
A little bit.
Yeah. Well, that's the only...
Like, it's not like you're sitting in a parking lot. You, like, went behind a fence to, like, one of those areas in between two spaces where they've just sort of let the trees do what they will.
Yeah, it's all honeysuckle bushes that have just grown wild for the last 35 years. I am very much in the woods in a
semi... I felt like I saw a pair of pants on the ground next to you.
Yeah. There's some clothing. I would describe this as a liminal space, a space between
Definitely
spaces.
Liminal.
It's very similar to the space where our logo appears on the back of the AFC Wimbledon shorts. Is it buttock? Is it thigh? Is it leg? Nobody knows for sure.
Yes. Well, it's all leg, John.
It's all leg.
If I've learned anything from being me,
that
entire area is leg.
Well, I'll tell you what, Hank.
Fight
I am
me.
In the high upper leg of Cincinnati right now. I have to say, Cincinnati, by the way, is a great town. I am loving my time here. It's just, I'm a little jealous on Indianapolis's behalf. I feel like we could achieve this with just a little bit of work, and I'm disappointed that
we
haven't.
Look at you. Okay. But, I mean, everybody on the coast needs to understand that the middle does exist and is available. I was in Austin, Texas recently, and there was a sign for Ohio that was like, Ohio, it's cheaper.
That's true.
I mean, I don't remember the exact words, but that was 100% the message they were trying to get across.
Yeah.
I was like, all right. Yeah.
We have less traffic. I feel like Indianapolis doesn't lean into that enough. Indianapolis should be like, hey, you want to be at work in 12 minutes? Come to Indianapolis.
Yeah, it works. Everything's working. It's fine.
Oh, that is actually that's the embarrassing motto that one of our former governors, who shall remain nameless, has tried to like make Indiana the state that works.
Oh, wow. I don't know. I get it. I get why he like or they like that.
Yeah, it's a he. That's correct.
Yeah. That's not a, I think that's good copywriting, honestly.
Well, he used to be vice president, so.
I can now guess who this is.
Well, actually, can't. Indianapolis, as one Indianapolis vice president put it, Indiana is home to more second-rate men than any other state in the country, because we do produce a lot of vice presidents.
Yeah, but are they? How many of them are around?
Two.
Oh.
Dan Quayle.
Who's the other one?
Dan Quayle! But he now lives in Arizona, and as you know, Hank, my home cemetery,
Crown Hill Cemetery. We're going to talk about whether or not Dan Quayle's going to get buried in your cemetery right now?
As you know, one of the most important projects of my life, I'm writing a letter
to the Dan Quayle estate again.
One of the most important projects in my life is trying to make sure that Dan Quayle, should he ever die, God forbid, chooses to make his last and final resting place, right, Crown Hill Cemetery in Indianapolis, even though he himself has lived in Arizona for several decades.
Everybody get out your pens. Dear Vice President Quayle, I don't know much about you anymore. I've forgotten most of it. I'm sorry about the whole potato thing. That seems overblown. I'm sure that there was some other stuff that was probably a bigger deal.
For those who don't remember, like, the big scandal of Dan Quayle's vice presidency was that he misspelled potato, which, like, if only we could go back to those days.
It was legitimately embarrassing. He was at a spelling bee, and he told a child that he spelled potato wrong when the child did not spell potato wrong.
Yeah, it was a little brutal.
It is the word potato. So, seems the card he had... And this would have totally happened to me. The card he had that told him the correct spelling of potato was the wrong spelling of potato.
Not only that.
And you're like, I don't know. The card probably is right. I'm Dan Quayle.
Right.
I don't know.
Hank.
This is a spelling bee card.
Hank, just to be clear, though, we need to burnish the legacy of Dan Quayle. We need to emphasize the many amazing accomplishments of Dan Quayle's vice presidency so that he will listen to the podcast and think to himself,
right, okay,
you know what I should do? I should make sure I end up at Crown Hill, home of more vice presidents than any other location on Earth.
Dear Vice President Dan Quayle, the thing I already said. You live in Arizona, but you know in your heart and deep in your genes and your bones and your body and your blood, you're an Indianapolis boy. Or an Indiana boy, anyway. Those amber waves of grain, those are yours.
It's mostly amber waves of corn, but go on.
The White River?
Yep.
Wow.
It really good.
It speaks your name with its noises. It just says, Dan Quayle, Dan Quayle, Dan Quayle, Dan Quayle, Dan Quayle.
It burbles along, whispering as it goes, Dan Quayle, Dan Quayle,
Dan Quayle, Dan Quayle, Dan Quayle. And the straight streets, they spell out with their straight lines in angular letters, Quayle. And there's probably a quail. When we're going to make the state bird, you're the quail, even if we don't have a lot of them. Do you
we
have
will.
Quail?
Probably.
Sure you do.
Probably.
Probably.
Yeah.
We're going to do that for you. You need to get rid of... And look, in Arizona, you'll never be a true part of the land.
No.
Because it's so dry, everything just fossilizes.
Mm-hmm.
You need to be in a wet place, like Crown Hill Cemetery. Sincerely...
Yeah.
Your name. Print.
Please. First off, God forbid somebody actually does that, Hank, because I think it was actually pretty good. Even the river whispering Dan Quayle.
That
Dan
part
Quayle's
was good. The
good.
Part where I was like, Dan Quayle, your body deserves to be moist, was not great.
That part, please don't include that if you write. And by the way, Vice President Quayle, if you're listening, we all die. And I just want to make sure that you and I end up in the same place, my friend. And that place is Crown Hill Cemetery in Indianapolis.
I think a lot about John Green's grave because I think it matters to him a lot. Mm. I think about it more than I think about my grave.
It matters to me a little. It doesn't matter to me a lot. Like
I think
I'm
it matters
like,
to me more than it matters to you.
I'm not
but
like
I want
James
John's...
Whitcomb Riley. I don't need to be buried at the top of the hill like some. Like
no,
I think I'm some
no,
Mr.
But
Fancy Pants.
I want there to be something special. I want, I want you to come up with something good, and like, you being like a John Green, responsible for Dan Quayle's burial right around the corner. Like, that's what you really took.
Novelist,
out of this
YouTuber,
life?
Father, husband, man who oversaw the recruit Dan Quayle to Crown Hill campaign.
Oh man, I bet. I bet if I read Dan Quayle's books, I probably would be like, oof, yeesh.
Well, I don't know that Dan Quayle and I share values. That's not what it's about. It's about believing...
We want to share some good wet dirt.
It's about believing that Indianapolis is the right home, really, for all dead vice presidents. And I want to also reach out to some of the vice presidents who never became president, who, or I should say, haven't become president yet, Vice President Quayle, because the arc of history is long. But
presidents are very old.
I want to reach out to some of the other vice presidents who have absolutely no connection to Indiana. Mm-hmm. You know, like, I want to write, like, who is that guy? Lloyd Benson? Did he become vice president?
Is he around? I don't think so. that's an unfamiliar name to me. Here are your options.
Okay.
You got Al Gore.
I want to reach out to, like, Al Gore, somebody who has absolutely no connection to Indiana, and be like, listen, man. You want to be a stop on the vice president tour? You need to be buried in Crown Hill. We've already got four of them.
Yeah, and Kamala Harris, too. Well, dear Vice President Harris, I know that you're 57 years old.
No. She's got a good chance of becoming president. At Crown Hill, we only want vice presidents who didn't become president.
I'll take Joe Biden. I think Joe Biden should be in Crown Hill, too.
No.
No, that's too much.
I don't want it. No, we got one president, Benjamin Harrison. That's all we can handle. If we get two presidents, Hank, people are going to start coming to Crown Hill willy-nilly. We're going to be one of the leading tourist destinations of America.
Have we asked a question yet?
We have not asked a question, but I also want to tell you about my new podcast idea.
Is it this? Because it's not.
Oh, God.
What's happening?
We have not asked a question yet, Hank, but I need to tell you about my mortifications. Uh-huh. I don't want this, like, Dear Hank and John just to become This Week in Mortifications, but can I tell you about the absolutely, truly, deeply mortifying thing that happened to me on Wednesday?
Yes.
Okay, so I'm on the set of the Turtles All the Way Down movie. It's the third day of shooting. I don't know most of the people, but I've, like, tried to be, you know, friendly and to meet people, and everyone is really nice, and it's incredible to have all these people pouring their love into this story, and it's just it's an amazing experience. And a young woman who I think works as a grip doing, like, construction stuff. I don't really know what everyone does, but I think that's what she does. She comes up to me and she says, I'm sure lots of people have let you know about this, but I just want you to know. I just want to make sure that you know that there's a huge hole in your pants. And I was like, what do you mean you're sure a lot of people have let me know about this? And she was like, well, it's been there since this morning.
And maybe you're just the kind of person who just lives that way.
Well, so then I was like, oh, my God. And I was like, so I was talking, I was saying how embarrassed I was as I was, like, walking backwards back to my car.
Sure.
And the director of the movie, Hannah, God bless her, said, oh, I thought it was a fashion thing.
Where was the hole?
In the seat, I would say.
You know, so, you can just say leg. It was the very upper leg.
It was in the upper leg. It was in the upper leg. And
super upper leg, yeah.
It was near the pocket. It was near what many people call the upper leg pocket of the jeans. And I was like, first off, Sandra, thank you. You are a hero. Indeed, you are the...
Everybody else is a disaster.
You are the only hero on this entire movie set. Everyone else is a monster. Nobody else gets any points. But you get all the points. So, that was nice. All right, let's answer some questions from our listeners. All right, Hank, this is supposed to be a podcast where we answer questions from our listeners, so let's try to do that, beginning with this one from Leah, who writes, Dear John and Hank, when my now husband and I started dating in high school, he wanted to be an astronaut, like most people. But the thing is, the possibility of that happening over time has become higher, because he is currently an astrophysicist working for NASA.
Okay.
I am terrified of the idea of my partner being strapped inside of a giant rocket that is propelled into the cold, dead reaches of outer space. Well, good news, Leah. As Hank is about to tell you, not actually that cold. just very, very dead. Obviously, yeah. I want to support his dreams, though. How do I cope if and when my partner actually does end up rocketing into space? Pumpkins and penguins, Leah.
Well, Leah, first of all, I think that your partner probably has a higher probability than once, but still
low.
Not still pretty low. It's not easy to become an astronaut, and there are not a lot of seats to get filled. But it certainly is a thing that happens to real people. It's a real job that real people have, and they go to space. It seems to be getting safer as time goes on, so that's good. But it is definitely a dangerous job, and there are lots of people who have dangerous jobs, and they have partners, and it is not... it's not comfortable.
Yeah, that's the first thing I'd say, is that you're not alone in this, you know? You might be near alone in terms of astronauting, but you're not alone in terms of having a partner whose work is dangerous and whose welfare you worry for. That said, like, part of being in a relationship is making space for that other person, whether, you know, it's a friendship or a romantic partnership or whatever. And part of making that space is understanding that they take on different risks than you take on, and that they have a different expectation of risk. That said, I think it should be a conversation. Like, I think it should be an ongoing conversation where you're like, man, it sure does seem a little sketchy up there. I wouldn't be afraid to say that. But like, if Sarah, I was thinking, like, when I read this question, if Sarah wanted to go to space, which admittedly is hard to imagine, but if Sarah wanted to go to space, I would be like, you know, just so you know, I'm going to stay here so that there's somebody.
Yeah, it's definitely not good to put two parents on a spaceship at the same time.
Yeah, I'm going to hang out here. But, but, if this is something you really want to do, like, come back.
Yes.
It's cool, and I get why it's cool, and I get why you would want to do it, and I don't.
I mean, the other thing is, it's such like a it's particularly nerve-wracking. Like, it's what, like, there's going to be a countdown, and everybody's going to be watching.
Oh god, it would be unbearable. And it would. I don't
really know how to deal with the anxiety of a moment like that.
I can't even like watch when my soccer team, not me, other people, strangers I don't know, are taking penalty kicks in a high stress situation. I can't watch it. I couldn't. Honestly, it does seem very stressful. I am deeply sympathetic to Leah in this situation.
John, this next question comes from Jody, who asks, "Dear Hank and John, whenever it's sunny, I like to go out and pull dandelions in my yard, and I keep at it until I fill a 5-gallon bucket, and then I stop for the day."
I'm sorry. Can we back up again? Can you say the first sentence one more time, please?
Whenever it's sunny, I like to go out and pull dandelions in my yard.
One more time, please.
Whenever it's sunny, I like to go out and pull dandelions in my yard.
Can we just roll it back just to this word that starts with a D? And can you say that 4 times for me, just right in a row?
Is it not pronounced dandelions?
Just four times, please.
Dandelion, 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 dandelion.
All right, you got closer. The way I'm hearing it, and I don't like to criticize enunciation, but the way I'm hearing it is as if you think that it is actually dandy lions, like fancy lions.
It's like a bunch of fancy. They kind of look like, they're not like a mane, they're like yellow.
Yeah. No, I get, but it's not, but dandy it's lions. It's dandelion.
Dandelion?
Dandelion. That's how I've always said it. Like, almost like Dan B. Lion, but with a duh, dandelion. And you say
you're right.
You say it like dandelion, like you, and dandy you say lion. It like dandelion, like it's a dandelion, which I like.
Dandelion.
Yeah. Okay. Great. No, I like it. I like it. I don't think it's technically correct, but I find it very enjoyable.
No, I've gone and looked, and it's definitely pronounced dandelion.
Yeah, that's how I've always said it, but I like your pronunciation better. So I think we should convert all of us right now. It's dandelions from here on out.
Wikipedia. Anyway,
it's like how you say Wikipedia, and then, but like the thing about the Wikipedia thing is that your pronunciation, at least in 2007, was correct.
Yeah,
like,
well, it's definitely
they wanted it to be called Wikipedia, but it just like over time became Wikipedia, whether they wanted it or not.
Yeah,
and that is indeed how we are going to make dandelions happen.
One day at a time. I mean, when you say dandelions, it sounds right to me. So I know that I'm not like making this up.
Yeah, no, I love it. I think I want. I'm 100% in favor of it. Okay. It's dandelions from here on out.
Anyway, the question is, between the sunny days, the dandelions are always growing.
Yeah.
At this rate, am I going to ever get rid of all of the dandelions in my yard? Is this a pointless and unending task? Is it worth it to just embrace the vitamin D and fresh air? Yard work makes me grody, Jody. If you like pulling dandelions, now it sounds funny to me. If you like pulling dandelions, pull dandelions.
Yeah.
If you start to see them as like a scourge that makes you a little mad to see it, every individual dandelion, you're going to be in a bad place. At least if you're in my town.
You're going to have a bad life.
Because there's no controlling the dandelions. There's every park is full of them. Every yard is full of them. There are a couple of yards that use like a weed killer to kill the dandelions and also every other broadleafed plant. And so we have like violets that grow, like volunteer in our yard, and if we put the weed killer down, we'd kill them as well. And they smell really good and they look really cute, so I like them.
Yeah.
And I don't want to, and so it's just like, you know, we pull dandelions to not have as many, but we don't pretend that we're going to get rid of all of them.
Well, right now, from the edge of a very small wilderness here in suburban Cincinnati, I can see approximately 650 dandelions. I'm trying to practice the pronunciation. Approximately 650 dandelions. I'm still not there. Approximately 650 dandelions. There. I think I got it. It's emphasizing the look. Approximately 650 dandelions, and there's a car alarm. Welcome to my life. I bet the people who are making the movie are really mad right now. I bet they're super annoyed with whoever
that is. That's going to be fun for them.
But, they're... It's like trying to get rid of all the honeysuckle, picking them out one by one. That said, if you pick them out one by one, there's lots of edible parts of dandelions that you can enjoy.
I pulled a dandelion the other day, and it came out with a root that was like a carrot. It was like as long and thick as a carrot. Apparently, you can eat those. I didn't eat it.
I mean, you can definitely make tea from dandelion roots. Okay. I've done that before. But in general, if you want to know about how to make your dandelions delicious, I recommend the TikTok of Alexis Nicole. Fantastic.
Yes.
So do dig them out as it pleases you.
As it pleases you.
And eat them.
If you want.
If it pleases you.
Yes.
All right, Hank, we have another question. This one's from Jordan, who writes, "Dear John and Hank, what are some words and phrases that I can use when going to art exhibits with my more high-cultured friends that will make me sound knowledgeable or at least less stupid? I feel like I shouldn't keep looking at paintings and saying, I like the vibe of this one." Pumpkins and penguins, Jordan. Well, first off, I actually think I like the vibe of this one is a really good response. Secondly, the thing that you can do when you are looking at art to sound the smartest when you are with your high-cultured friends is to ask them to talk to you about that artwork. Because nothing makes you seem smarter than letting your friends talk. Because if you just let your friends talk at the end of it, your friends will be like, "Ah, what a smart person that Jordan is. He allowed me to talk for 7 straight minutes."
This is what the high-cultured people want, listened to.
They want to opine, and so you give them an opportunity to opine. But
so you say, why do I like the vibe of this one?
Right.
And then they say, it's the balance, it's the contrast, it's the texture.
Right, and they say, in the early 60s, as I'm sure you know, an awareness of materiality was emerging, and with that came the question of the thingness of a thing, and when does a thing attain thingness, and all that stuff. And, I mean, Sarah read this book once called... It was called something like The Anxiety of Chromatic Engagement.
Oh, yes. I have that, for sure.
I have most of the major anxieties, so I do...
including the chromatic engagement one.
I can certainly feel anxious around chromatic engagement. right now, I'm chromatically engaging with the redness and the yellowness of the Jiffy Lube logo, and it is provoking some anxiety, for sure.
It's meant to stand out.
Yeah,
to cause an emotion.
But I think some rules of thumb Sarah gave me when we first started talking about art were, one, ask a lot of questions, don't make a lot of statements, which I think is really good advice just in general. Mm-hmm. Like, two, when you're talking about an artist's work, you're talking about their work, like their work in general, not just one work. When you're talking about mm-hmm. one work, you're talking about this work or a work or this group of works. And the other thing is that when I was accustomed to saying modern art, a lot of times what I actually meant was contemporary art, like art being made after 1960 right. or art being made yeah. now or whatever. Uh-huh. And so modern art refers to a specific moment, the moment of modernism, which has passed.
This is bad.
Why?
Because words ideally mean the thing that they mean. When you're naming things, and I'm not, and like, look, chemistry has no, or biology, we have no leg to stand on here. Yeah. We name things terribly.
Yeah.
Sometimes great, sometimes fantastic, but yeah. oftentimes it's like, how do you say it in Latin?
Right.
And it's
right,
like,
right.
why didn't you just ask how do you say it in English?
Yeah. What's the worst version of this? How can we make this the least approachable thing in the world? And that is definitely something that the art world does. And the art world does that partly to build up walls to increase the perceived value, the perceived luxury goodness of the luxury good of an artwork.
Yeah.
Like, that is, like, that's not a coincidence that the art world sounds so stuffy and fancy. Now, there are moments, like, when you dig really deep into anything, you need a certain precision of language. This is something we've talked about before. Like, when you're an expert in biology, you need a precision of language that you don't need when you're talking about biology for regular people, and the same is true of art history or literary analysis or anything. But most of the time, we can talk about most of what is interesting about art and art history with language that most people know.
So, one of the most helpful things I've learned is in art is that you can't say modern unless you know what that means. So instead you say contemporary.
Mm-hmm.
But isn't there like post-contemporary now, which makes me very uncomfortable?
There's sort of an emerging...
We will not allow that to happen. Contemporary is just what's happening right now.
Yeah. Yeah, contemporary is happening now, but there is, after modernism, you now hear some art museums talk about post-war art, like the sort of from the 1945 to say 1967, and then people talk about contemporary art as art being made since 1967 or whatever, but like these are always changing definitions.
Oh, yeah.
But I always found it hilarious that Sarah got an art history degree in contemporary art. Like, it's such a wonderful contradiction in terms.
Wow, that's weird.
it's like getting a PhD in the history of biology happening now.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you could, though. You know, the history
Hank,
of biology.
What would you get a PhD in if you could go get a PhD?
I would definitely get a PhD in internet communication stuff.
Oh, you would. That's right. You totally would. And you might. Like, that's still on the table for you.
It's not. If I lost a couple jobs, like if I got awfully fired, I might.
I would get a PhD in the history of infectious disease and our relationship to infectious disease, and it is very much on the table for me. Like, that
is
not.
I think that would be fantastic.
That is not impossible.
But I mean, I would want. I want to get so many different PhDs. But I mostly right now, I think one of the my interest aligns with what I think is sort of most important for society right now.
Right.
I think is like understanding how humans communicate through the internet and the impact of it and the extent. One thing I'm very curious about, and I don't think there's been a lot of research on, is the extent, like, the systems we use to build up inoculations to strategies for manipulation.
Mm.
And, like, whether that's, like, mm-hmm. misinformation or conspiracy mm-hmm. or just, like, advertising.
Yeah.
How fast does culture build up inoculations against, like, everything from clickbait to conspiracy theory?
That'd be really interesting. Like, how fast did we build up a... Like, I mean, you could look at it historically, like what happened after the emergence of the printing press. How did we come to establish an idea of truth in the wake of that technological revolution. But you could also just look at it in the history of the internet. Like, we've tried to do that a few times and sometimes had some success. Like, Wikipedia is a bit of a success story. It's not an unambiguous success story.
It's Wikipedia.
And it's dandelions, but we're embracing the new, Hank.
That's right. That's right.
We're going contemporary. Hey, speaking of the last question, this one comes from Hannah, who writes, "Dear John and Hank, hey, scientifically, what is a vibe?" I feel like I might want to.
That's
idea.
A great PhD thesis.
Yes, yes. I want to get a PhD in vibes. What are you studying?
Yeah. If you ever get an honorary doctorate, do you get to choose what it's in?
I hope so.
Because I would take vibes.
Yeah. I'd like to get a PhD in like just the vibe of this room right now.
Yeah.
I'd love to study the vibe of this little thicket of honeysuckle bushes. My bucket studio.
I love that you got a bucket studio. John and two buckets.
It's just a man, two buckets.
Two buckets and John and a fuel can.
Computer with no internet access, no less.
A man with two buckets, a fuel can, and $3,000 of equipment.
Seriously, maybe more. You count my phone.
Yeah.
Well, Hank, what is a vibe scientifically?
I don't think that we're going to be able to answer that question. I don't think that science is going to have that.
Hannah goes on to get specific, and I think her specificity is really interesting. Hannah writes, "When I get into the car with my mother or father, I can tell within 2 seconds whether or not the interaction will be pleasant. What's up with that energy, man?" And that's so true. Like, you can tell. You can tell the vibes. How do you know vibes?
What I will say is not an answer to the question, but it is that human communication is tremendously complicated, and we take in much more information than we know that we take in, and we process it very quickly. And, you know, one of my favorite things is in order to sort of check myself in terms of my own, like, my theoretical ability to make judgments about people, is that I can sit in an airport and think I know an awful lot about every person walking by, which of course I don't.
Right.
But like, my brain is making up ideas and stories about them. And it's like, I know that person's a college student, that person's, you know, a business person, that's, you know, a suburban mom. Like, you just like can imagine that you know who somebody voted for just by looking at them in an airport.
Right.
And that's wrong. You can't. But like, my brain thinks it can.
Mm-hmm.
And so oftentimes the vibe is very much wrong. Probably not as much when you're talking about your mom in the car.
With your mom and dad.
You know your mom pretty well.
Like, I think with your mom and dad, you know their body language. Yes. And you may not be conscious of how they're sitting in the car, or how their voice catches on their first syllable. Mm-hmm. But you know. Yeah. Because you have had so many previous experiences.
Yeah. But then I oftentimes hear like people talking about the vibe of things that they don't like, of communities that they don't interact with.
Right.
And I'm like, I think that what you mean is that you don't like those people and you're just trying to justify real quick.
Yeah, for sure. And I also think that we fill in vacuums of information and we often fill them in incorrectly. This is a huge problem I have, where I assume with very limited evidence that like somebody is really angry or that somebody resents the hell out of me or something. And then it turns out reality is more complicated.
Right. Like, you got the vibe right, but you didn't get like the source of the vibe right. This is a constant problem in relationships. And having a 5-year-old is like, I understand that he's mad and he's mad at me, but the fact that he's mad at me does not mean that the thing he's mad about was anything to do with me.
Right.
Like, he's mad at me because he fell down.
Yeah.
And you know, and like, he's 5. So like, he's not projecting his anger in the right way. Like, he wants to be mad and he's like, you're there. And he's always mad at me, which is something that we all do. Like, we get better at as we get older. But like, right now he's doing that a lot. And I'm like, dude,
yeah,
I didn't push you. Like, you fell. It happens.
Right. But I think that especially at that age, you still sort of think of your parents as extensions of yourself.
Right, and like, why did you let this happen?
Why did you let this happen?
You've protected me other times.
You are part of me, and it's weird that my right arm didn't catch me as I fell.
Yeah.
And I'm mad.
John, this next question comes from Abby, who asks, Dear Hank and John, how do you think of new jokes? When I try, I invariably just picture a tomato and cease to have any other thoughts. Tomato, tomato, Abby.
Hank, before I answer the question, can I just give you another little peek behind the curtain here?
Sure.
My back hurts.
I bet. That's true.
Squatting on a bucket is not as comfortable as it used to be.
John, how worried, like, are you squatting on the bucket because you're, like, worried that the bucket it isn't, like, structurally sound?
There is.
That sounds like it would be really uncomfortable.
There is definitely a little part of me that feels if I move my body even very slightly, I will fall through the bucket.
Like you don't. You don't want to do is like have this be a real old bucket that is not.
Well, that's what I would say about this bucket, Hank. This is not like a 6 month old bucket. This bucket is, I would estimate it's obviously in the first half of its life because it lives for like 12,000 years. It's not in the first half of its useful life. Like this may be the last time this bucket is meaningfully used by a human being. This bucket may be having its last. Proper experience of the Anthropocene. Like when I turn this bucket over, when this podcast ends, that may be the last time the bucket turns over.
When oh my god, that is so loud.
I know. I'm sorry. So somebody from the movie
what
is backing up.
That
was it's like a semi truck from the movie.
Okay.
I never. There's so many semi trucks associated with the movie, and I don't know what's really happening in any of them.
What do they all do? Who knows? What I'm worried about, John.
I only know the one that has Diet Mountain Dew in it.
That's too bad. You don't have a Dr. Pepper truck. What I'm worried about.
Yeah.
Is that you end up with the bucket breaking and not only a new hole in the upper leg of your pant. But also new hole in the upper leg of your body. So that was a joke.
I cannot afford another humiliation on this set.
Yeah. So that was a joke.
Yeah.
And the way that I thought of that joke was, okay, we're talking, like, my brain was like, I'm worried that John is going to hurt his butt.
Yeah.
And then I was like, oh, earlier we talked about a hole in John's pants. And if you hurt his butt, then there would be, I can refer back to that previous, and it would have been funnier if I could remember the name of the director, Hannah something?
Hannah Marks, yeah.
Okay, so if I could have said, like, it will be, you know, I can sort of call back to John's mortification of needing to go up to Hannah Marks, a director who he respects and has already mocked him a little bit accidentally for his pant choices. And had to talk about an embarrassing wound that actually needs medical attention.
Yeah, I would have had to. There is a medic on set, and the thought of having to go to the medic and say, "I'm sorry, I fell through a bucket while making a podcast with my brother," is not an appetizing thought.
Yeah. The thought was funny, and I said the thought out loud.
Yeah, so that's a lot of it. But I also think that the way people come up with thoughts is different. And this is something that's been on my mind a lot, because when Hannah and I have been talking about the script with the producers and when we're all working together, a lot of times, you know, they'll be talking and I'll be typing. And the way that I have thoughts mostly is by typing them, and I can like work off of Hank jokes, and sometimes I can come up with jokes of my own, but a lot of the way that I think through something, that is such a loud noise, is by typing. And you know the and oh, typing okay. is well hold on what I mean, isn't it a problem for the movie people that you're making that noise anyway? So for me, the way that I think is partly through typing, and it's the same way for Hannah, actually. And so we'll be like writing something together in a Google Doc while other people are talking, and that works for us. But mm-hmm. I find that like if somebody says like, hey, what's a good idea for blank, my mind immediately goes blank. If somebody says like, what book are you reading right now, my mind goes blank. And so
right.
Different people have thoughts in different ways. That's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah. And coming up with a joke, I don't tend to sit down to write jokes. Though what does often happen is when I'm writing fiction, the characters will make jokes. because just the same way that I would make a joke during a conversation. I do love jokes. Mm-hmm. Whereas what I don't love is that noise. Oh my God. I mean, the sound
so loud, those air brakes. I know, we're really radio labbing it up back here.
Yeah, well. Are you going to do this? Are you going to be outside next week for the podcast?
Because
I'm going to go outside for the podcast next
week.
And we're going to have competing soundscapes.
Probably going to be outside forever, which actually reminds me that today's podcast is brought to you by the Turtles All the Way Down movie. The Turtles All the Way Down movie. Apparently, it's filmed entirely outdoors.
This podcast is also brought to you by two buckets. It is literally brought to you by two buckets, without which John would be having an even worse time sitting on the moist Cincinnati ground.
And of course, I don't know why Hank is obsessed with the moisture of Midwestern ground today.
It's a wet place. It's wetter than...
It's really not. It's just that you live in a very dry place.
It's very dry.
Anyway, additionally, of course, today's podcast is brought to you by the Fuel Can. The Fuel Can currently supporting my laptop, an integral part of today's podcast.
And this podcast is brought to you by Dandelions, Wikipedia, and Vibes. Dandelions, Wikipedia, and Vibes. Probably real.
At least Hank can pronounce Vibes.
Oh my God.
We also have a Project Frosted message from Chelsea, who writes, a shout out to strangers I'll never meet, but I'm grateful for this year. To the Greens and other creators, to healthcare workers everywhere, to activists and teachers, to whoever invented bacon maple donuts, and to people who have sacrificed holidays and family dinners and friendly gatherings to make the world safer. Though we've never met, I see you, I appreciate you, and you are not alone. We're here because we're here. That's lovely, Chelsea.
Chelsea, that was so great. Thank you.
Thank you.
That is, gosh, I feel like... I've always felt like, or for years, I felt like one of the things that we really have is a deficit of appreciation, and that it helps so much me personally, and it also helps the people being appreciated.
Yeah.
So thank you for that reminder.
Taking time to be grateful for...
For strangers.
For strangers is really important stuff.
Yeah.
We should really, Hank, just let the Project for Awesome Messages be the podcast. It's much better than any of the writing that we do for it.
Yeah.
All right, Hank, I have a question from Willoughby that I really want to ask you. Hi, Hank and John. I prefer John and Hank Willoughby, but that's fine. Why can't we just collect all the trash in the world into a giant ball and slingshot it out into the deep space, which will simultaneously create a new planet and deal with all of the world's trash problems? I've been thinking about this for years now. Willoughby.
It's great, Willoughby. Let's do it. Deep space, trash planet.
I think the big issue with it is that it's very energy intensive to get a massive amount of trash off the planet.
Oh yeah, no, for sure. It would also
for it to be a planet-sized thing of trash, we would need all of the mass of the Earth to be trash.
Well,
or at least
a
all
third.
Of the mass of like Mercury to be trash.
Yeah, yeah, which would be very difficult.
I don't know, Hank.
Trash is a
we could
trash
do
is
it
a pretty...
if based on this liminal space that I'm looking at right now. There's probably like 600 pounds of trash just back here.
That's true, but the Earth is a lot more than 600 pounds. It's very weird how big the Earth is and also how small the Earth is.
Yeah.
At the same time.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it would cost around $33 quadrillion. Someone calculated that.
Wow.
Which is...
Is that expensive?
Basically all the money. so we'd all have to work together really hard.
Would it be so expensive because of the fuel costs?
Yeah, it would basically use all of the fuel that we have, which we don't. We want to use it for some other stuff. Probably would do a great deal of harm to the environment.
Oh, really? So we would be removing the trash, but we would be like dramatically increasing carbon emissions because of all the expense of carbon we would burn shooting the trash
would be
into
significantly
space.
Significantly bad. Yes.
What if we used
wouldn't want to?
What if we used a slingshot?
Well, that also would, unfortunately, there is a thing, that is this idea, where it's not a slingshot, but it is like just like a thing that spins really fast.
Yeah, spinner.
And it gets spinning faster and faster and faster, mm-hmm. and then it like lets go of it.
Yeah. Sometimes.
And.
I remember somebody did that to me in middle school. It sucked.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like that, except you go all the way to space.
Yeah, you fly. That's got a couple like four of problems. Feet. It was very exciting. Uh-huh. But this would be an even more extreme version where you go all the way to space.
It's got some problems. A lot of the trash would vaporize on the way up because of the
That sounds pretty serious.
And then that would be in the atmosphere. So you wouldn't want to do that to a lot of trash. Then you've got another problem of needing to power the spinner, which then would also require some source of energy, which maybe you could do with just acres and acres and acres of solar panels or fusion reactions or something. But the great thing, I think that we think trash is a... We got a lot of problems. I'm not saying trash isn't a problem, but I think that we think that trash is a bigger problem than it is. Because we've got some bigger ones. I'm not saying it shouldn't be on the list, but it's kind of visible. We experience it. We do a lot of the sort of throwing away of trash, so we see it. We don't see that the hole in the side of our house that's burning the natural gas is sort of chugging natural gas, or not natural gas, hopefully, carbon dioxide into the environment. It's invisible. You can put your hand up to it and feel it, but you don't really ever think about it. And that is actually a bigger problem for the earth than trash.
Whoa. What is this hole in my house that is chugging carbon dioxide into the atmosphere?
It's the hole. It's the vent that the water heater and furnace vent through. So
good to know.
The water heater and furnace almost definitely run on natural gas, though I don't know for sure.
But mine
that's
do.
The case for most people.
Mine do. But,
and
but
yeah,
they
you can
won't.
Hold your hand up to the little. Your house has an exhaust pipe. No one ever talks about the fact that houses have exhaust pipes, but they do.
Yeah, no, that's... Wow. I don't think I knew that my house had an exhaust pipe.
It does. It's one of your biggest sources of carbon emissions, the exhaust pipe in your house.
Oh, Hank, speaking of carbon emissions...
Yes.
We had an idea on the Patreon earlier today, and I just want to run through the viability of it.
Okay.
So I'm in Ohio for the Turtles All the Way Down movie, and the... two remaining racks is the roast beef restaurant that Hank and I went to as a child are also in Ohio, but they are not close to me. They're actually like as far away from me as Indianapolis is. And if like all things being equal, I'd probably prefer to drive home. Nothing against racks, but I also really want to go to racks one more time before we die. So what I'm
and also like, who knows when these racks are going to close?
Yeah. Right. I mean, we don't know about the health of these racks. So I'm wondering about the ethics of the next time you visit me chartering a plane to go to the racks. Like,
well,
you know how like
thing.
All the famous YouTubers like charter planes and like make videos like, where they're like
Mr. Beast it up.
Yeah, where they're like I'm on my private jet. What if we did that but we just went to racks?
Well, here's the thing. No, obviously not, but there are more economical and fuel efficient methods of flying, like doing a private jet. We're not going to do that, but I bet a Cessna could get us there. And like three people in a Cessna is not that much less efficient than driving. So you, me, and the pilot.
Oh, I was going to say who's the third person, but then I realized
that we probably shouldn't consider that a person because, like,
I mean, okay,
they don't care where they're going.
Counter-argument.
They don't want to go to the racks.
Counter-argument.
Yeah.
Three people in a Cessna who've just been to racks and are
there
now
is no bathroom
flying
plane,
back
no.
to Indianapolis in a bathroom-free situation seems like potentially my idea of hell. It's,
you know what it sounds like is a great YouTube video. Sounds like an awesome YouTube video, and it sounds like two very stressed out wives.
Remember,
is what it sounds like to me.
Remember the Finnish racks where the Google reviewer said that the ice cream machine destroyed his pants?
Yeah. I do not want to destroy this man's plane.
I mean, not to mention our pants, which would definitely be destroyed. Like, the plane might recover, but I think the damage to our pants would definitely be fatal. I mean, I'm not sure I could keep my crap together, literally or figuratively, on the Cessna, even without racks being involved. Like,
yeah,
that sounds very stressful to me. I do not want to fly at 900 feet with a stranger piloting a twin engine aircraft so that I can go to racks. It is a great video.
It's twin engine? Really, no way.
It's a really good.
One engine. That's too inefficient, John.
Oh, God. I mean, imagine when we crash, Hank. Imagine the obituaries. Hank and John Green died today doing what they loved.
Being idiots on the way to a rat.
Trying to commit to a bit.
All right, John, what's the news from AFC Wimbledon? I know what it is, but I'm going to make you say it.
Wimbledon have been relegated to the fourth tier of English football.
So League Two.
League Two.
Sounds better.
Yes, we have been relegated. It is so frustrating because it actually to stay up this year required fewer points than it has ever required in the history of the third tier of English football. It only required 41 points from 46 games. We could have tied every game and stayed up. We could have won any of the two of the last 10 games instead of drawing. It's just so frustrating. But the truth is, if you don't win a game for more than half the season, and Wimbledon still have not won a game since December of 2021, if you don't win any of your last 26 games, you're going to get relegated. And we got relegated. And I mean, it felt inevitable for so long that to me, it's hard to pick one moment where it started to feel inevitable. But I mean, of the 26 games that we've gone without a win, we've had 14 or 15 leads. And so, it's just hard to conclude that anything else would have been appropriate. The people, of course, will be looking for silver linings. I mean, hopefully we'll win more games next season. We own the stadium. It's our stadium. It's the fan stadium. It's the fans club. That doesn't change. And, hopefully we will have a budget that is appropriate for League Two. But there's no getting around how difficult it is for a football club to be relegated because it's really hard to get back up, especially for a club like Wimbledon that don't have gigantic money behind them. And so it sucks. I'm really sorry for all the fans, all the players, all the fans I've brought into the club. I feel responsible for this. I feel responsible for their sadness. But I do. I think at the core, the community is still there and they're home. And I can't believe we got relegated in the first season with fans back at Plough Lane. Like, I really thought that was going to be a path to sustainability in League One. And maybe it will be eventually, but not this season. So just sucks all around. The only other silver lining, Hank, is that and you never root for a team to get relegated, of course, but the only other silver lining is that we will next year in League Two still play Gillingham and or Gillingham, so I still get to make that joke. That's the only other good thing, is that the Gillingham / Gillingham joke survives, just as GIF and JIF do. So so we go again. It's a short off season this year, relatively short because of the World Cup being in the winter. So won't be too long without Wimbledon football. But next season we'll be in the bottom tier of the football league. So we need to stabilize and grow from there.
Well, in Mars news this week, the Ingenuity helicopter did something very, very cool.
What did it do?
It flew over to the place where the parachute and
it took a picture of its former self.
Yeah. And it's like super freaking cool. It's like this spaceship crashed on the surface of Mars.
Yeah. And can they kind of tell from photographing the crash site via helicopter, like, if things went about as they hoped they would go?
Yeah, it went as expected. And you know, I don't know what they learned from this. I don't know if you can say like, ah, good. Well, this is exactly
right. Martian gravity and geology is just as we expected. Yeah.
My guess is that it's more like we wanted to take this picture, but like maybe there's some good science, at least about the behavior of the spacecraft that
right.
is useful from the perspective of these photos. But like some of the weirdest photos of the surface of another planet I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Just to see like a literal crashed spacecraft on Mars.
It looks very human, for lack of a better term.
Yeah.
It emphasizes that humans have made a pretty significant intervention. We're not just living in the Anthropocene. Mars is also living in the Anthropocene.
A little bit, yeah, yeah.
Mars' Anthropocene is just getting started. And people are like, oh, I'm sure people hearing that are like, oh, that's really bad news. But I would totally disagree. I think Mars having an Anthropocene is the best news Mars has had in some time.
Yeah. Yes. I think that it's probably, you know, better news for Mars than it is for Earth in some ways.
Oh yeah. No, I...
it gets a little rough for Earth.
Earth, it's more complicated. Mars is probably like, oh, this is nice.
Mars is like, oh, what's that?
Something's happening. This is kind of fun again.
It's been a while since somebody tickled. Yeah, I did see a couple of comments that were like, ugh, now we're littering on another planet.
Right.
And again, trash is a problem. But I think that it matters more, oftentimes it matters more in terms of like what it looks like to human eyes than to the actual environment it is inside of.
Yeah. Well, I just think the thing to emphasize in general is that we are a catastrophe, but we are also much else. Like we are complicated, and embracing that complexity, I think, is key to being able to move forward.
Yeah, I agree, John.
Well, Hank, thank you for potting with me. I cannot wait to get off of this bucket.
Well, you know, can't get off of it yet, because I'm going to make you go record This Week in Stuff with me, our patron-only podcast.
Patreon.com/DearHankandJohn, which is also where you can see free pictures of my sweet, sweet setup.
This podcast is edited by Joseph Tuna Medish. It's produced by Rosianna Hals Rojas. Our communications coordinator is Julia Bloom. Our editorial assistant is Deboki Chakravarti. The music you're hearing now and at the beginning of the podcast is by the great Gunnarola. And as they say in our hometown,
don't forget to be awesome.